It's 2021, and we're back with the latest, greatest, Awesome Cast, Awesome Awards 2020 Edition for anime and TV. This is the Awesome Cast. Welcome to the Awesome Cast, folks. Once again, we are going through the Awesome Awards for 2020. I'm Basil.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Douglas.
I'm Dylan.
And the rest.
Which is... Charlie, are you there?
Yes.
Cool. John, are you there?
I'm walking around this town on the corner.
And that's us. Last year was certainly a year, but there were some good cartoons of the animated and also anime variety. Think we can agree on that?
I disagree.
Oh, it was all bad?
I'm joking. I'm sorry. Okay. Accept my deepest apologies.
They are accepted, and I will forward them to the complaints department. How do you feel about things, Dylan?
Things, as in...
You're the complaints department now. you've been promoted.
I don't know what... Okay.
That was no good. John, what do you think about things? I've hired you now.
They are hot garbage, Basil. They're hot garbage, and they're going to get worse.
Oh, right. Now, that is the positive attitude I am looking for.
At what point does it stop becoming pessimism and does it become realism?
As it doesn't become like you screaming about it, like, you know, Alex Jones or something, I think we're good.
Listen, I take 8 pills a day and I still scream sometimes.
Okay.
Now that should be the 2020 slogan. Or maybe... Or maybe that's going to be the 2021 slogan. I don't know anymore.
Sometimes you're internally screaming. Sometimes you're externally screaming. 2021.
A.K.A. 2022. 2020-2.
I actually have a shirt up on my Redbubble store that is "Please Scream Inside Your Heart 2020. If people want to go buy that, like, it's pretty goth metal.
My heart can only take so much until it just comes out.
So, 2020 brought some good things into this world and some not so great things. Also, weird things like, I guess Sony owns Funimation and Crunchyroll now? That's going to be a thing?
Anime streaming monopoly.
Mm-hmm. Hey, they're still High Dive.
For now.
Yeah, for now. It's true. Meanwhile,
not that I know anything, but, you know, just statistically.
When Sony inevitably buys Funimation and Viz.
Yeah.
I don't know if...
Not Funimation, Sentai and Viz.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question, because I think there are, like, I think Viz and Funimation do have things, like, in the pipeline that's, like, you know, like Europe and other things, not the United States. So, you might already be correct.
Yeah, I mean Yashahime.
But speaking of Crunchyroll, let's get into it. Let's talk about some anime and some television. Doug, give us that first good show.
First good show, Tower of God. Everybody should watch it. It's a major Korean movement, and we are could be starting at the ground up of it.
Yeah.
That nice. Doesn't sound... I'm not sure that sounded too good.
You sound like Elizabeth Alligator from Knoxville. Man.
That sounds like a sales
pitch. I'm ready to sign for your pyramid scheme.
Okay, great. So fantastic.
So if I get Basil and Kevin to join, they're in my downstream? Is that how that works?
Yes.
It's a reverse funnel. Everybody's in everybody else's downstream.
Okay. So let me try this again, sounding less like a crazed sales pitch. Okay, Tower of God is very good. It's based off a Korean manhwa, and it's really kind of important that everybody should be paying attention to this. Whether you liked the anime or not, the manhwa is actually doing gangbusters in Korea. It's part of a large cultural movement. It could end up being as impactful on South Korean culture as One Piece is on Japanese culture, which outside of Japan, you really don't see just how prevalent the presence of One Piece as a media empire really is. I want to also compare it to Dragon Ball, but that feels almost sacrilegious to me. But I do think we're looking at that kind of thing. Like, it can't be understated the impact that this webcomic is essentially having on South Korean culture. One of the reasons I think it's significant is because it is a webcomic. That is the venue that it's being released on immediately. And also, like, one of the main female characters, her name has essentially broached into common South Korean culture with such ubiquity that you can just say her name and it's like calling someone a bitch. It's essentially the South Korean version of Karen.
Oh my.
Yeah, so I really think that people need that not enough attention was paid to the anime, because it's a shonen fighting anime. What more do you want? But it is actually having this huge cultural impact that I think we should pay attention to.
I did think it felt kind of slow, although I did love the Alligator Man.
Well, that's another thing. Because we've been getting our anime from Japanese sources for so long, we're used to the way things are. We're used to the kind of mythology that Japan likes and Japan has an idealization of. But by this coming from a South Korean source, we're getting a different Far East perspective than the one we normally get. And so I think a lot of Western fans didn't really, I wouldn't say understand is not the correct thing, because it's very easily understandable. I think it just hit people's sensibilities different than how they were expecting to. Like, I know it hit mine. The first time, like, my husband suggested watching it, I was like, oh, it's not Japanese? No, that's weird. I don't want to watch that. you know. But then it was playing and we were watching, and I'm like, this is really good. What show is this? Who recommended this to us? And he was just like, it's that South Korean anime that you didn't want to watch. But it is actually really good. If the first few episodes may feel slow, I would still stick with it until the Alligator Man becomes a main character. Once that happens, it's pretty great from there on out. And it's not actually the Alligator Man that makes it so great. He's not the reason why it becomes so great. He is a great character and he's fantastic, but it's really by that point that all the other characters kind of coalesce and develop and really come into their own. So everybody is really intense and compelling, but that's kind of the mark of when it gets good.
Huh. Alligator, you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not even a big fan of the show, but the Alligator Man is gold. It's worth watching for Alligator Man.
Well, yeah. It's interesting because the show I'll be talking about in a little bit has a Crocodile Man.
They might be related.
Reptile people are just cool. Watch Dorohedoro also. That's got a guy with a lizard head also.
Now, Kevin, that's not what you listed as the show you want to talk about. What was the show you want
just,
to talk
just
about?
No, just an aside. But, well, first show I want to bring up is Akudama Drive, a.k.a. Better Cyberpunk. Although I will talk about Cyberpunk 2077 when we hit games. Akudama Drive, I think, remembers more the roots of the cyberpunk genre and the punk part of cyberpunk. It's Akudama. I'm a little unclear if all criminals are Akudama, but all Akudama are criminals. And they're like, if this was Cyberpunk or Shadowrunners, these would be your PC who are doing, like, you know, basically illegal jobs for money.
Oh, yeah. I very strongly, when I was watching this, was able to pinpoint which one of my normal tabletop group would be which person.
Like, but it's basically about, you know, five almost superhuman criminals one kind of crappy criminal and one normal girl who just wandered into the whole thing get roped into basically a heist scheme by a talking cat that's actually some kind of robot, but it's a talking cat. And that's only the first few episodes, but I think an interesting part of it is nobody has a name. Everyone's kind of called by what they are or do. Like, there's Courier and Brawler and Doctor, and the girl who's normal eventually takes the name Swindler because, oh, she's such a good criminal, none of you even know she exists. She took her records out of the system. She's that good.
Sounds legit.
Like, she just BS's her way into a place in the group eventually.
I mean, that's a mark of a true role player.
Yeah. She has a lot of character development. By the end of the show, she has legitimately become an ass-kicking cyberpunk. And she's earned that. But I do like that the borderline sociopathic weirdos, not all of them stay good guys. It's a little bit of a spoiler, but not all of them stay good guys. If any of them ever were good guys to begin with. It also has some strong anti-capitalist, anti-authoritarian.
All good cyberpunk does.
Yeah. Like, there's a whole division of the cops that are literally have license to kill.
Wow.
Like, just and, whatever.
And, like, all good cyberpunk, it really has its roots in the 80s.
Yeah,
and
a little bit.
Much like having its roots in the 80s, John?
Thank you, Basil. Yeah, one of the things that really sang to me throughout 2020, because, you know, as you listen to these best of, you know, we've said it before, we'll say it again, that a lot of these picks are just how we survived the year, and Retro Crush certainly helped me in a very particular way, because I grew up with Robotech and Voltron, you know, some of those...
The classics.
Yeah, the classics. But it wasn't until, you know, around 93, I was like 11, that I started to like... I saw Vampire Hunter D on TNT once and was like, what the fuck is this? Because it was just this amazing fucking thing that I was watching. I was like, this is animated? This is a cartoon? What the hell is this? And really started to seek anime after that. So I have a real, real soft spot for like late 80s, early 90s anime because it's so dark and weird and just fucking insane. And Retro Crush has a lot of that. It's got the original Bubblegum Crisis, not the god-awful, what was it, Tokyo 2040?
Yeah. Does it have both, or am I thinking of something else?
It may have both.
But it's got
on the website right now.
Yeah. It's got the original one, and that's the only one that matters.
Absolutely. It's got the original Appleseed. It's got Angel Cop. I could just fucking go through here and list all the shit they've got on here. But the larger point was it allowed me to kind of go back to that point in my life where anime was fresh and new. And to find anything else, I had to go to a Camelot. I know you kids don't know what the fuck a Camelot is. But it was a store. It was like a physical brick and mortar store in the mall. And you had to go like between it. I'm not joking. Literally between Disney and porn was anime. That was the buffer.
Yep.
Isn't that just a metaphor for the entire medium?
I mean, you're not wrong.
Some of it.
And then you paid, you know, $30 for 60 minutes on VHS. It was awful times. Now you can watch this shit for free.
Yeah.
Thanks to Digital Media Rights. No, yep. No, that's the name of the company that owns Retro Crush. Digital Media Rights.
DMR, not DRM, even though it's the same fucking words, just slightly rearranged.
It is, you know, like, free.
Yeah, I can't complain too much.
And it's there is a lot of the stuff I like, yes. I like Retro Crush as well.
And honestly, I'm really glad there is another avenue for Discotech to funnel things through that isn't just Crunchyroll, especially now.
Yes.
I'm also really glad that Digital Media Rights finally got a channel that people really like. Like, I've been covering Digital Media Rights for a minute because they also own Asian Crush and Midnight Pulp that no one uses.
you know, the kids, when they talk about anime, they sit there and go, oh no, Funimation got a hold of it. Like, can you believe that shit? Like, they're sitting there going, Funimation got a hold of it. We're worried. Like, where have they been for the past 20 years? Oh, right, they weren't born yet. They're children.
Yeah,
they don't know.
It's like, what? Who the fuck were they wanting to pick it up? Genion? That's an old school joke for you kids.
Excuse me, I preferred it when they were called Pioneer.
Yeah, sure. Do they want ADV to put this out? Matt Greenfield just gonna, you know, buy the rights on this, turn this around? Jesus Christ, you guys. Like, who else is it gonna be? It's gonna be Sentai. And then you guys are gonna complain about that shit too, so fuck y'all.
Look, it's unfortunately there is a group of unfortunately clueless anime YouTubers who have decided that Funimation are a devil and they're going to, quote, censor everything because that's what gets the clicks.
Yeah. Kids don't know the difference, don't understand what translation and localization mean and use the words wrong.
So, speaking of things like that, also old things, good things, but also new things with good localization that I kind of wish still kept the Japanese name, Dragon Quest Adventure of Dai. Or, as it's known in Japan, Dragon Quest Dai no Daiboken, which is a much funnier name because it's Dragon Quest Adventure of Adventure. Because Daiboken's adventure, and the main character name is Dai, so really it's kind of like they named him Hero, but didn't actually name him Hero or Yusha.
It's like Legend of Legendary Heroes?
Yes.
Yeah, except good.
It was it's a show, well, it's a manga, originally. What I've been watching now is the new 2020 show. But the manga eventually was written by Riku Sanjo and drawn by Koji Inada. Now, Riku Sanjo has written some pretty baller things, like The Giver. Hmm. Also MD Geist. And Cybernetics Guardian. Also, he helped write Kamen Rider Forze and Cutie Honey the Live. This guy knows what real Japanese stuff should be like if you want something that's not done by Akira Toriyama, but might as well have been. Because, goddamn, is Dragon Quest Adventure of Dai the most Dragon Ball-ass dragon thing that's actually called Dragon Quest? Which makes sense considering Yuji Horii, who is the creator of Dragon Quest, got his start in Shonen Jump. So, back
to that, but like, Toriyama did art for the Dragon Quest series, did he not?
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. And in fact, he was too busy, you know, dealing with the crazy amazingness of Dragon Ball that he could not actually do the Dragon Quest manga. Hence why Riku Sanjo and Koji Inada got tapped for it. So the manga was actually from 1989 to 1996, and it's like 37 volumes. The thing is like it's a gargantuan piece of work. Like it's apparently it is one of the most well beloved Dragon Quest things that aren't the video games that there is around. And so for Dragon Quest's anniversary, they decided to bring The Adventure of Dai back with a prequel manga, a spinoff manga. They're actually now making a video game based off of it, which is now kind of funny considering this was a manga spinoff of a video game, as well as a new version of the TV show where I guess Toei was actually given money to animate stuff because, boy, some of the animation in this is actually pretty darn sweet. Like, it very reminds me a lot of, in some respects, Tiger Mask W, or Tiger Mask Double, where it was still done by Toei, but Lord, you can tell the people making it really actually like what they are drawing and animating. And it's just, it's got, like, all right, mild spoilers, but at some point, Dai, who clearly can go Super Saiyan when he needs to be, because it's a dragon thing, has to fight this other dude. And he's like, oh man, I learned how that I can totally go Super Saiyan. And the bad guy is like, ha, you don't understand. I can totally beat you. I'm a swordsman, but I was raised by a monster because my parents were killed by monsters, but then I was raised by my monster daddy. And Dai's like, oh no, I can't go Super Saiyan and kick this guy's ass. And they're like, why, Dai? Because I was also raised by a monster daddy. I can't do it. It's so good, and it goes crazy. And yeah, it's got a dude who's like a crocodile man, who's like a bad guy at first. But anyways, Adventures of Dai, man, it is awesome. Everyone should be watching it. It's on Crunchyroll. If you need some good, like, shonen, like, hero action going on, get yourself some Dragon Quest Dai no Daibouken. So, something that's completely and utterly not that, Charlie.
One of the things that I quite enjoyed in 2020, although it came out in 2019, and I'm sure everyone has seen it by now, is Carolyn Tuesday. By,
oh, that is so good.
Created, directed, partially written by Shinichiro Watanabe. And if you're unaware, it is about Carolyn Tuesday, these two girls who meet on Mars. One is a runaway from a rich family. One is a refugee from Earth. They both love music, and they want to make music together. And it's about how their love of music changes society on Mars. It's got a lot of great music in it, a lot of characters that seem to be based on real-life musicians or people in the music industry or in politics. For anyone that's lived through 2016, it is going to seem extremely topical, and which I think makes it a perfect fit for the garbage fire that is 2020. So I cannot recommend it enough. It's very heartfelt. And like I said, it's a lot of great music. If nothing else, it's worth watching for the Martian version of America's Got Talent, the two or three episodes.
Best tournament arc.
That yeah. Actually was the point where I bounced off of it. And that's not to say it's bad at all. It was just like, I kind of lost interest at that point. It's really good.
Like you can't prove that the show's not in the same continuity as Cowboy Bebop.
I've actually been thinking about that, and I think it has to be, and that just Cowboy Bebop happens further in the future.
Don't they use Wulongs as the
currency?
Yeah,
they do.
That's why I started thinking about it.
And as I recall where the show takes place, I mean, I don't know where it is in sort of Earth history, but Mars, if I remember correctly, Mars has only been terraformed for about 50 years. Where the show takes place. So this would be like well before Cowboy Bebop. But I feel that they've got to be in the same universe. Like there's, I mean, if nothing else, it's just fun to imagine that that's true.
Yeah. It's weirdly a show where the sci-fi elements are completely unnecessary. They're just kind of fun that they're there.
Yes. There are some extremely fun details, sci-fi details. My favorite being the stalker hacker whose fingernails light up when he's touching a keyboard that's not there. Like, little stuff like that is, like, it's never really commented on, and it adds just a wonderful sci-fi atmosphere to a show that really isn't. You could strip the sci-fi from it, and it would still be a very compelling story, because it's very much about it speaks very much about today on Earth, particularly a lot in the United States, actually. So, yeah, I think it's really good, and if you haven't checked it out, you definitely should.
Well, speaking of anime, Dylan, what you keeping your hands on?
Oh man, that's my own segue, man. We did an episode of this, but I'm putting Keep Your Hands Off Isaacin on the list just because it just combines the best of a lot of different genres. You follow a team of creative people working on a project, and while it's romanticizing that process to some degree, it gets into the real day-to-day details, the workarounds, the difficulties, things like that they face. then you enter this sketchy kind of half finished version of the worlds they create. And it's sort of like taking in a massive fantasy movie like Miyazaki or something in a few minutes. And they actually do manage to balance the tension really well. It's not just like, hey, here's a bunch of people doing this creative thing. They start off early on with some drama with one of the characters' families, and I didn't expect that with what I'd heard about the show. And it really like drew me in, but it never got stuck telling that story. It always came back to them making an animated movie. And one of the things I really liked, I think when we did the episode, most of us ended up identifying with Kanamori. Mm-hmm. And she feels like in other shows, she would have been like the killjoy who's dragging everyone down, but she's kind of an integral part of them living out their dreams. So just really good all around.
And Dark Horse is putting out the manga. And guess what? It's still good. All right, Doug.
So as you guessed from when I was talking about, from when I've been talking about other things, one of the big things for me this year was comfort. Like, I didn't always necessarily go for the quality thing. I went for the thing that made me feel good. And that's what Sleepy Time Princess in the Demon Castle is. Like, this anime puts me to sleep in a good way. It's like a bedtime story, and I love it. The basic premise is that there is a princess in some generic fantasy type realm, and there is a demon king, as is normal in fantasy type realms, and he has kidnapped the princess, and she is now waiting for the hero to come rescue her. But she decides that the bed that the demon gives her is insufficient. And so she goes about terrorizing his castle, getting the materials that she needs to make a comfortable bed and have a good night's sleep. And she goes about it with the single-minded dedication that only an anime character can go about doing things. And it's wonderful and fun to watch, and it's also really sweet, and you feel comfy and safe at the end of it.
And somewhat scared of her.
A little bit scared of her, yes. Yes, a little bit scared of her. As the show goes on, you identify more and more and more with the demons that have the job of watching the princess and sometimes getting killed by her. Because, you know, it's like a video game. They all respawn, so it's not a problem if she kills them every now and then. And if she dies every now and then, that happens too.
Yeah, it's a fun show.
It's really cute too. Like, oh my gosh, I haven't wanted to cosplay since like forever. Like, I think Raven from Tales of Vesperia was the last person I wanted to cosplay. And I want to cosplay as the Sleepy Princess because her outfit looks so comfortable and I think I would go to sleep so easily in it. Which is pretty much the premise of the show.
All right, Kevin, you're on the hook for this one because I'm actually starting to watch it now, so you got to explain why everyone else should watch it too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. So we're Adachi and Shimamura. It's a really good show. It's a really good show about two girls who kind of become friends because they both decide to cut class and hang out in the same place, which is like in the by the ping pong tables on the upper area of their gym, because no one ever goes up there apparently. And they just sit up there, they hang out and they talk, and Adachi kind of sort of realizes she's falling in love with Shimamura, and Shimamura is really oblivious to it all. And it's, they just kind of their adventures.
And a weird alien kid.
Oh, yeah. But that's not really important to the plot, but there is a time-traveling space alien. And I cannot... This is not a joke. That's really unimportant to the plot. But it is an element of the show. Like, because if you take that out, it is kind of just this slow... A slow build, like, Yuri romance anime. With two characters who are really very flawed people in different ways who both think the other one has their shit way more together than they do.
But it's also got this cute little alien kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we know the part that Basil likes about it.
To me, okay, yeah. It is like, it is once again absolutely not what the show is about. But there's this time-traveling alien girl who, as far as I can tell, is in fact a time-traveling space alien. Like, she's got weird glowing blue hair. Everyone else has normal hair colors. And she latches on to Shimamura's little sister, and after a while, and they're always hanging out. And she'll just turn to Shimamura's little sister and say shit like, "My people live 8,000 years," just out of nowhere. And it is a... it is a thing. But it's a hard show to hype up, and like, there's not all these wild, crazy things happening constantly. It's these two girls just kind of being regular people, and as soon as they realize they're in love and actually have been dating for quite a while now, the show will end. Except, you know, they keep not realizing it. I feel like it's, you know, if you're a Yuri anime fan, you kind of have to at least check it out. If you're not, maybe you should check it out anyways.
Oh, no, I'm still having a good time. Like, at first I was like, oh man, oh, sweet, they're playing ping pong? Hell yeah, heaven knows what I'm all about. Why is this weird alien kid? Whatever. And then later on, I was like, oh, I see why Ken wanted me to watch this show. Okay.
Look, there's two reasons I tell you to watch a show, and if you don't see a giant robot in the first 5 minutes, you know what the other one is.
And now John gets to tell us the to be determined.
Yeah, I wanted, instead of to focus on a particular show, to, you know, as we're talking about how we got through the year, talk about my general practice through 2020 of leaning hard into sitcoms. It feels like it's been a million years, but, you know, we watched Community, we watched Parks and Rec, we watched King of the Hill, American Dad, What We Do in the Shadows, Gundam Wing, which really isn't a sitcom unless you think it's funny like I do.
It's so weird.
It really is.
It just has communication.
I need to redo Gundam Wing. I personally need to redo Gundam Wing and re-air it as what I remember, and I think it would do great. Spoiler alert, they're all gay.
The Doug cut?
Yes.
I didn't finish it back in college when I first watched part of it. All I remember is Hiro walking by what's-her-face going, you know, "I'll kill you," and like,
"I'll kill
okay.
you."
Okay. Extremely yes. normal relationship.
Well,
cool.
That's a big part of the Doug cut. Like, that, yeah. that scene.
Oh no.
Let's see. Other great things about the Doug cut is I was also really into the Utena movie at that time. So there's a lot of bleed between the two in my head of what I think happened versus what actually happened. And so that is part of why I think I need to completely redo it, because it'll be fucked up when I do it, guys.
Is there already a Gundam the Abridged series?
Yes, probably. But it's not that. It's not that.
There was only one good Gundam Abridged series I ever saw, and they stopped making episodes years ago.
God, you know, I'm a little disappointed in myself that I didn't lean into G Gundam to get. But then again, 2021's already off to a great trash fire start. So yeah, that may be the next thing I do is G Gundam, because it is so stupid.
Let's commit right now to a G Gundam podcast in 2021.
I mean,
oh no,
committing.
I
right
love
now.
Me some G Gundam.
Like, oh, me too. It's my favorite one.
It is up. It is, depending on the day you ask me, sometimes my favorite. That or Turn A.
It's definitely the most racist that I've seen.
But it's racist in the most good way.
Most just like Cobra Kai, which is my show. Cobra Kai.
racist because there are no black people except for the one guy in all of Karate Kid who knows karate and he just happens to be Asian.
Well, it is really amazing that they gave the keys to the franchise to the folks best known for the Harold and Kumar series.
Oh, wow.
And they actually took the Karate Kid and made a really good TV show out of it. Where they went, what do Karate Kid guys, but the olds now. Now what happens? And it's really, really, really good.
Like, I've not watched it, but conceptually I love the idea of going back to the jerk kid from the first movie and, like, seeing what happened to him.
And what's amazing is then you forget until you watch the first movie when you realize they were both kind of jerks. One of, you know, Johnny was a bigger jerk, but Daniel wasn't exactly, like, a great kid either. And are they both still also kind of screwed up adults in their own way? Sure are. And now they have, you know, kids of their own. Like, this show should not be good. This show should be the last chapter of Harry Potter or Boruto or something. Where you're like, wait, we're following the kids now? That's what we're doing? But it works. They did it. It's good. And I'm still surprised. Like, we just got the third season, and I'm still really, really enjoying it. And they are doing, I think, a better job with everything than the movies did at first. I think they also try to, they try to tackle the themes what they can. Although the creators even admit, yeah, the two main characters we've got are, yeah, they're two white guys because that's who they were in the movies. But they're trying. Gosh, it's the third season, but the scenes in Okinawa are just are great. And if you remotely liked the second movie, man, Chosen is so good now. Like, oh my gosh, he's my favorite character now.
Wow.
And you won't know it until you watch the episodes. But dang, man, I wish they would make a Chosen TV show now. I really wish. I want a Chosen show. I want the Chosen Kai. You know, that's what I want.
Okay, I definitely have to check this out eventually.
All right. Charlie, what does the future have in store for us?
Probably my audio dropping. But...
All right, let's do this.
If it doesn't do that, Steven Universe Future. Daryl and I did a full rewatch of Steven Universe once we figured out that HBO Max had Steven Universe Future. Mm-hmm. Watched the original show, watched the movie, then Steven Universe Future. And so we've talked about Steven Universe, but I've never had a chance to talk about Steven Universe Future because the final episode only aired like March 27th of 2020. And it is basically, let's take Steven Universe and age him up a few years, maybe 3 or 4 years. So he's got all the hormones of a teenager. And also, you know, all that trauma that he endured during the original series and the movie and how he took on other people's trauma and solved everyone's problems. Well, now things are very peaceful. There's no problems left to solve. And all he's left with are his own.
And all that trauma that he took on.
And it is, like, I don't want to say it's dark, but, like, there's a good stretch where I was like, I don't know that I like Steven anymore. But
Jesus.
I mean, it is, because he's having a lot of trouble, and he's trying his hardest not to deal with it. And it is only compounding the problems. And it's the show is really about, like, him trying to figure out how to deal with the stuff that he just has not had time to deal with about himself and about other people figuring out that they've put a lot on him and they need to be there for him now. So it is kind of rough in places, but I think it was definitely I think if you are a teenager watching it, or were a teenager at some point and are watching it, you will see a lot of familiar things.
I repressed all of my teenage years, so I don't know if I can relate.
So did Steven. So
I'm gonna take this off of a side path and just say I fucking love Zach Collison. I do.
He's good in it. I mean, everybody's excellent in it, obviously.
I mean, just like as a person, just like the little bit, the little bit of interactions I've had with him.
The actor of Steven.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's been at MomoCon a couple of times.
Yeah,
I bet he would be a good person. He sounds like a good person.
I think at this point, the only like major person we've not interacted with has been Rebecca Sugar herself, and God willing, MomoCon will eventually get her as a guest.
That'd be nice.
Because that would be such a good interview. But yeah, I cannot recommend the show enough though, because it ties up a lot of loose ends and like I say, it gets dark in places, but like when you're done with it, it's like, yeah, this is probably the way it had to end. And I've seen some interview stuff where Rebecca Sugar has said that she knows where the story's going next, but we will probably never see it because she's giving the characters their privacy.
Oh, my.
I definitely, if you've got now that all of it is on HBO Max, if you have access at all to HBO Max, definitely worth going back to the series, doing a full rewatch, and then hitting up Steven Universe Future, which is not a huge, it's more of a mini series, but very worth it.
So, to once again bring us on home, I realize that it's kind of interesting that Dylan chose this show to talk about, because way back when we talked about StationCon 2020, this was Dylan's moment of awesome.
Well, I was just going to say, I really like this show too.
Have you actually, you watched all of it?
Yes, and it is amazing. I'm so glad that you're bringing this up as a great thing.
Okay, the show is Joe Pera Talks With You, and it is, I feel like it's one of those, like John was talking about sitcoms, I feel like it's one of those shows that is just good comfort food in 2020. It looks like a gag. The pilot and the first episode are patterned after bad educational films. It's a whole bunch of, it's a town full of people doing weird things, but it's unexpectedly wholesome and it kind of makes you feel safe.
Yeah, you get the feeling that everybody's doing this ironically and they're going to start doing, a whole bunch of super weird stuff, but it never actually does that, and it's better for it. It seems like every character is very earnest and genuine in their own right, and there's something kind of nice about that.
Yeah,
not every character, but the ones that aren't just turn out to look like dicks.
Which character are you thinking of?
In the Christmas thing that we watched a few weeks back, it was the lady's husband.
Yeah, but was even...
The Mike Melski?
I don't remember the name, but he was just saying shit, and Joe was just going along with it as if it was true, because he was up shit.
His character has an emotional arc. I am not making this up.
It's true. It's true. Even he who you think is at least aware of how ridiculous everybody else is being, is actually very genuine in his own assholery. It's great.
It's what's so great. There's an episode in, I think, season 2 where he and a bunch of other guys are at this bachelor party, and they've kind of set some things up with him that he's doing some weird stuff, and they just kind of all break out and start talking about their feelings, and it's weird, but it's great.
I thought it was great. I thought everything about it is great.
I know. It's.
They, I feel. What, I feel really lame that all I can sit here is go, oh, it's so great, and I can't come up with anything more descriptive about it, but it's really just kind of quiet and understated in a way that is really insistent and fantastic.
I think it does some interesting things, though. Like, I almost think it's one of the most realistic and emotional shows on TV, and that's even considering... I think that's in contrast to the idea that realistic means gritty and dark and angry.
Yeah.
And I think the way it does it, one, it does, like you're saying, have all these characters that kind of do these little whimsical things. They talk about heating an apple over a fire or watching YouTube videos or getting super into the Who. But on the other side, like, it has people who might ordinarily worry us. Like, it has doomsday preppers, it has, you know, that character that you're talking about, John, has anger issues, but it makes them so silly and cartoonish that it kind of nullifies the power that they would have over us. And I think that's part of what it does. And I think, like, season one is really calming. Season two is great because it proves that it's not just a goofy show. It's not just gags about, you know, like a bad educational film or, you know, landscape shots and things like that. It shows characters who are still doing goofy things, but are going through conflict and grief. And they don't just resolve this in the next episode and come back like, nothing happened. Like, there is an actual, like, journey that these characters go through. And I swear, if you watch this, you will think I'm overstating it, but I am not.
It's like an anti-sitcom.
It kind of is. Yeah, that's a good point.
It's kind of like the anti-sitcom, where it takes a lot of things that, like, a sitcom would do, but, like, if real people did the sitcom things.
Yeah. I do think it uses that, like, you think these characters are all ironic, but it kind of uses that ironic detachment to smuggle in a bunch of things under our cynical filters.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, that's just one of the best things about it. Like, I remember, I think when I mentioned this at StationCon, I had just hit, like, the middle of season two. I don't think it had all aired yet, or I don't think I'd finished it. And, man, like, that was why, that was one of the reasons I added it, as a moment of awesome. But yeah, well, it's...
I heard, and so this is some just pure rumor speculation, but I heard that the guy who does Joe Pera, who does that, he stays in character the whole time they were filming it. And a lot of the other people who were working on it thought that was going to be really kind of frustrating and irritating to work with this really just eternally soft-spoken, gentle guy. But it actually turned out to be really, really affirming and really comforting, and it made shooting it just an absolute dream. A lot of them left wishing that everybody would film like that, like just quietly insisting upon the best thing for everybody at the time. Like,
I don't know how much of it is character. I really wonder, because, like, I've seen, I think I watched an interview he did on some late night show, and I think I watched, like, a clip of his stand up, and it's the same character, more or less.
Well,
like, he's...
My understanding is that the character is more or less just an exaggeration of what he genuinely is. Like, he genuinely is that way. He's just exaggerating it a little bit for the camera. And by a little bit, I mean, like, a very small amount.
Yeah.
So, folks, this has been the Awesome Cast. Once again, the Awesome Awards 2020 at Deep Beyond. Next time, we'll be talking about games, mostly at the video variety. This episode has been masterfully edited by the most wonderful editors ever, my wife Anna, who I love and adore very much.
Same.
Our theme song is made by DJ Inibito. You can find it at djinibito.com, who I also love and adore almost as much. But he's no Anna. I think he would agree with that.
You can find us at awesomecast.com. We're on Twitter at awesomecast. I'm on Twitter at It's Basil Time. John's at J5 is alive. Dylan's at Dylan Wolf. Kevin's at twitless_Kevin. I believe Charlie's at V_sommelier.
Yes.
You can also now find us on Discord. We have a Discord now. If you didn't listen to last episode, if you haven't, go back and listen to find out that we have a Discord. Also, I do want to point out at the very end, in the extended AwesomeCast Cinematic Universe, I did want to give props that I forgot about, and I feel really bad I didn't mention the Otaku Melancholy podcast. There are a bunch of young up-and-comers who I'm really glad that they're doing stuff. I talked with them about Hamacon. Very inadvertently, they cold emailed the con chair, and she was like, "Yeah, not me. I don't do this podcast thing." They went, "Hey, Basil or Chelsea, do either of you do the podcast thing?" And I went, "Oh, I do the podcast thing." And so I started talking to them, and apparently they were like, "Who's this guy? We wanted the con chair." And I went, "Yeah, I'm not that, but we'll have a good conversation." And we did. And now we follow each other on Twitter. We're mutuals, and it's gravy, and they're good kids. So there is that. Speaking of good kids, Old Talking to Radio, Jared Inc., let us on sometime, will ya? So thank you for everyone talking with me about all the things they've enjoyed with anime and television. And thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time. Until then, we out.
We are in the future. And it's bright. I can't believe we've come so far. Steven Universe future, here we are.
So one time, this story may need to be edited out later, but I still want to share it with you guys, at least while I'm talking about it. But so one time, I played a character.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
That's one of those moments where you can have made a TikTok of that moment.